and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. A phone call didn't end the conflict in Ukraine, but the same phone call demonstrated that indeed diplomacy is back on the agenda. Essentially, to end the conflict in Ukraine, Russia and the United States must first mend relations. Kiev and the Europeans are furious. Crosstalking Diplomacy, I'm joined by my guest, Garland Nixon, in Washington. He's a political analyst and radio host. In Dallas, we have David Walaalu. He is a geopolitical analyst, author, and veteran. And in Bangkok, we cross to Brian Berletic. He is a geopolitical analyst and a former U.S. Marine. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Brian, let me go to you first here. So much has been happening ever since the first phone call to the second phone call and meetings in Saudi Arabia. The Russians have not really changed their position that I can see. Their parameters remain the same. The Trump administration seems to be kind of probing, but having an approach to this that is very optimistic. I'm not sure I am as optimistic about it. Of course, as I said in my introduction, the Europeans and the Kiev regime are furious here. Where do we stand right now? We have a moment of good feeling, but is that going to last, Brian?
Well, I would caution people regarding hope and good feelings. If you look at the history of U.S.-Russian relations since the end of the Cold War, it has been nothing but a cycle of broken promises, encroachment, aggression, proxy war, and then feigned attempts to buy time by posing as wanting peace. And the last example we can remember was then U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton standing with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, pushing a reset button, smiling ear to ear, saying they want to go into the future working with Russia. And we could all see that they were, in hindsight, that they were just buying time to set the stage to overthrow Ukraine, create a battering ram pointed straight at Russia, and precipitate the very war that we're in the middle of right now. The U.S. has reached an impasse, and now they need to buy more time. That's how I see it. That's why I would caution people against being hopeful or having good feelings.
Well, a very measured approach there. Garland, essentially the same. The difference is not disagreeing with Brian, but Kiev is losing this war, and that is obvious to all. And that's one thing that the Trump administration really can't do very much about, and that's recognized here. So adding that in from what Brian say, how would you, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, I think it is difficult to be optimistic about a diplomatic settlement anytime soon, specifically because Donald Trump, as an individual, and probably some people in his leadership and in his party, his followers, would like a quick diplomatic resolution. For we could talk about why, but he apparently does. But he's leading a coalition in Europe who is adamantly opposed to it. He's leading a Kiev regime who's, in my opinion, a puppet of MI6 creation, who is adamantly opposed to it. And most of his, the blob in Washington overall. So here we have a person who would like to get a deal himself, leading a giant coalition who's at war with him. His problem and it's not with the Russians. The Russians are very reasonable diplomats, and they'll work with him and honest. His problem is that his entire coalition is at war with him and at odds with what he wants and completely unrealistic because they know they have to spin a massive defeat into a victory, and there's no real way to do that.
Yeah, David, what we've seen so far, I guess importantly, we even had the head of the General Secretary of NATO saying that membership for Ukraine and NATO is not on the table right now. That is a change, at least the strategy-wise. But what Trump needs to do is he needs to pull the funding and the military aid, the intelligence here, because obviously, Trump and the Russians would like to improve relations, but that can only go so far, David, when American arms are being fired into Russia. I mean, Russia cannot go down the path of normalizing relations with the United States when American weapons are killing civilians in Russia. It just can't maintain that. Go ahead.
Well, actually, we have to thank in terms of, wasn't it Trump himself that have allowed the transfer of Javelin during his first presidency? So how can you be this double standard, saying one thing and doing the opposite? Well, here's the thing. The devil is in the details. And I'm sure they're going to be at the upcoming negotiations soon in Saudi Arabia regarding hammering down or determining what those details will entail. There is no way Russia is going to back down from its key clauses regarding what it wants. What it wants, it's very specific, and it has been stated back in 2022. So what Donald Trump is doing, basically Donald Trump wanted to show the domestic audience, I told you so, I am going to end the war in Ukraine. That's an illusion for Mr. Trump to be even thinking in this term. There is one other point regarding this is that what you are noticing right now is that this so-called New World Order is now emerging from the Middle East that is excluding Europe in these negotiations regarding the Ukraine conflict.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, one of the interesting things, if you look at the readouts of the second telephone call, mm-hmm. they're really very different. Very few people have focused in on this here. But the Russian one was focused on bilateral relations in Ukraine and very little on other issues. The American one was basically the reading between the lines that they want the Russians to help them with America's problems all around the world. This is very typical for American administrations here. The Russians aren't going to buy that.
No, and think about what the U.S. is talking about. They want help containing Iran, Iran being an ally of Russia and China. Maybe they would like to ask Russia for help in containing China as well. And I just want to direct people's attention back to President Trump's own Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Back in February, he laid out a directive to Europe, because I continuously hear people say Europe is opposed to President Trump and his peace overtures to Russia. Secretary Hegseth told Europe to double down on supporting Ukraine, expand their military industrial base, prepare troops to enter into Ukraine to create a buffer zone. And as far as I can tell, Europe is just obediently doing exactly what the Trump administration told them to do. So I think there's a lot of theater at play here. And I think it's meant to distract people, to prey on people's emotions, and to distract them primarily from the fact that this is what the U.S. has always done. There is this cycle of aggression, encroachment, and then failure and the need to buy time. And I will just continuously insist that that is what we are watching right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you because Garland, I mean, the it seems to me that it's slowly but surely the Russians are saying, can you hear what we've been saying? Because the Russian position hasn't changed at all. And the American one has changed all over the place. And I suppose that's the frustration here. The Russians are patient and say, you finally understand what we're telling you. It's a slow process. Go ahead, Garland.
Well, additionally, what happened during the Biden administration, the parties of the collective West would basically, you know, negotiate amongst themselves of what they, well, here's our negotiation. Russia must, unilaterally concede to all our demands. That'll work. And they'd give it to Russia and Russia, or they'd mention it and Russia would say no. They're doing the same thing. Trump is having an internal conversation with, you know, the MAGA people, with whoever. And then at some point, it's ceasefire. Russia's already said no. But basically, Trump has a conversation and the Trump administration has a conversation that his people or his coalition or whoever will accept. And then they go forward with it. And the Russians shoot it down every time because it's preposterous and absurd. So at this point, there's not a realistic discussion from the Trump side, and I don't see how anytime in the near future they can have one, given the context of the preposterous coalition of the, you know, crazy, of the lunatics that they have.
Well, you know, David, one of the interesting things that's been mentioned in the last news cycle is that Trump may be considering a non-American to be running NATO. I mean, that's interesting. I'm just throwing that in the mix here. How do you read that, David?
Yeah, I would say that if Donald Trump really is interested in peace, then let's withdraw the U.S. from NATO like what General Charles de Gaulle did back in the 60s. So if it is, that might sound a little bit off the cuff here, but To me, this is what leadership is all about. You're saying you want a peace in Ukraine when we are the one that has been fuming the tensions to begin with. We're the one who created the problem. So if you are to say, let's put the U.S. out of NATO and let the Europeans find out if they could even sustain themselves, as the Europeans have been talking about this, what we're going to have to establish our own security and so forth. It has been nothing but talks. Europe
well,
will not be able
I,
to
I would say forward. To all three of you, is that then do it. Stop talking and
talking.
Just do it. Okay, Brian, I'm going to give you the last minute before we go to the break. Go ahead.
Well, I would say that there were a lot of things President Trump could have done if he actually really wanted to end this conflict. And just as David was saying, this is an American proxy war on Russia. This is not a war between Ukraine and Russia. The U.S. is stepping in and mediating over. The U.S. deliberately started this conflict. And as was pointed out, President Trump himself helped prepare and provoke this during his previous administration with the sending of arms to Ukraine. So what it really does just look like is disingenuous intentions and comments and maneuvers to try to corner Russia into a ceasefire the U.S. and its allies can use to freeze the conflict, create a buffer zone in Ukraine, put it on pause, pivot to China, and circle back around if and when possible when the U.S. Feels it can deal with Russia again. This is the cycle that has continued since the end of the Cold War, and there's no evidence suggesting that it's about to come to an end.
Yes, and the using that line of logic, the Russians were impossible to negotiate with. That's what we're moving towards. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on what is called diplomacy. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing diplomacy. Okay, let's go back to Garland in Washington. What is the state of the North Atlantic Treaty right now? I mean, it seems that we've gone through cycles of this. I think a lot of people don't understand. Charles de Gaulle was already mentioned here. NATO's had its ups and downs. Is this a turning point here, or is this a big bluff? Go ahead, Garland.
I think it's definitely a turning point. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the United States drops out of NATO, at least for some period of time, if they completely withdraw from Europe, because, as Brian said, their big fear now, their big enemy is China. And I think to some extent, their plan was we'll weaken Russia, we'll take over Russia, and that'll make it easier to go after China. That didn't work, so they'll just say, well, let's put Russia on hold, then we'll go get China. And then once we get China, they're just going to reverse it. Who do we take first? And so, yes, they may. And if you notice something, when these other the European states say, well, we're going to be completely armed so we can take out Russia, the United States doesn't say, no, don't do that, because we're going to be friends with Russia. They say, sure, go right ahead, and we'll sell you the weapons to do it so that we can sharpen you up, just like we did Ukraine. We can prep you to fight Russia while we're over here getting China. So once we get finished dealing with China, you'll be set to take Russia out. If they really wanted a friendly relationship with Russia, they would say to the Europeans, no, we're going to have an alliance with Russia. You can't fight Russia. But you notice they're not saying that.
Yeah, well, Garland, I'm going to get David right now. I mean, the rules of risk are more sophisticated than the what we heard from Garland. It's just child's play. I mean, it's very juvenile, and it's very, very dangerous here. For any of those things to happen, you would have to have the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians and everybody else to go along with it. That's not going to happen, and that's why it becomes very dangerous. David.
Well, that's why, for those who were thinking that the sort of this Ukraine conflict is going to end in one phone call because Mr. Trump did so, they are mistaken. You know, the world of geopolitics is so complicated. There are so many moving parts into this. I mean, you look at now, just whoever thought that the Houthis, for example, will stand out against the Americans despite our military might, and they are not backing down. And that just highlights to you the complexities of where things are headed. And when you add to this the conflicts in Ukraine, there is no end in sight, except that the Russians is going to want to end the war on their term, not on the Europeans or the Americans. And this is a reality. Washington is not willing, Washington and Brussels, for that matter, is not willing to accept. This is why we're seeing the prime minister of UK pushing for this narrative of, well, we're going to have to fight the Russians and so forth. You won't extend. As a matter of fact, it was a report in the Pentagon that was for internal consumption was released and it stated that if the UK end up fighting the Russians, they will run out of ammo in one afternoon. That's how bad it is. So, and the reality says, speaks for itself. So it is my belief that Mr. Trump will have to do more than just what he's saying. Europeans will have to understand the reality of what it is. And at the same time, the Chinese, the Iranians are just watching for now.
Well, Brian, I've asked this question a couple times already on this program. Is Trump trying a reverse Nixon goes to China? Because that's what it kind of looks like. Again, I think looking at the readout from the White House tells us that. Brian.
Absolutely. But surely everyone in Moscow is thinking we're being lured into a trap. We're being separated from an actually reliable ally, China, I would say an indispensable ally. And they're going to use this opportunity to weaken, undermine, possibly collapse China. I mean, if the US could have its way, that's what they would do. And then would anyone in Moscow actually believe that they would not be the next one in line once that happened? And surely they understand this network of alliances and partnerships that makes up the emerging multipolar world. Surely they understand that that is their best defense. That is their best strategy. And waiting out American hegemony and waiting for an opportunity for the US to overextend itself to then try to find a way to bring the US in constructively into the multipolar world. But that is a long, long way off. And surely I don't think anyone is foolish enough to allow themselves to be split,
Brian,
apart, divided, and defeated.
You bring up such a good point, Brian. I mean, what great power agrees to that? You're a hegemon. Oh, I decided not to be a hegemon anymore. It doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. And this is what I think a lot of people are misunderstanding. They see President Trump, they think somehow he's going to put the brakes on the momentum of American hegemony that has been ongoing for over a century. It just doesn't work that way. It's not realistic. I think if we want to be realistic, we have to understand that there is a process at play in the US driven by unelected special interests. It's only going to stop when the multipolar world creates the conditions that make it impossible for it to go any further. That, I think, is the only solution to the conflict in Ukraine and conflicts all around the world being fueled by America's pursuit of hegemony.
You know, Garland, it's very interesting on this program. We've talked very little, actually, about Ukraine, okay? And that's because it's a proxy war here, and that's why it's going to be so difficult for Trump to end it. I mean, he is boxed in by design, Garland.
Yeah, and he's boxed in by the circumstances, because if the United, it's going to be very, very difficult for the U.S. to continue to argue it's the hegemon if they got their you know, head beat in Ukraine, which is basically what happened, what has happened. It's going to be very difficult to drag the American people and other allies along to go after China after they've made an attempt to go after Russia and lost badly. So they have to figure out how to get out of this thing without a bad loss. Because at that point, see, they've got to drag allies along with them, and they've got to have other proxies in Asia to go after China. If they walk away from Ukraine, and Ukraine has been beaten up, and the United States has been beaten up, and they walk away with their heads down and their tail between their legs, it's the Philippines, Japan's, and all these other countries of the world are going to say, yeah, you guys just lost that last one. We're not going to, it's going to be difficult for us to get our people to go along with you.
Well, I mean, but that means, David, that the West, particularly the United States, could escalate. I've been warning about this all during this conversation. Escalation is always a possibility. David.
Well, there is a reason for that, because like Brian mentioned earlier about the special interest groups, there is one reality in Washington a lot of people do not know, is that those special interests, and in a reference to the military-industrial complex, requires about $50 billion a year from the government. This is in terms of the conflicts. This is why we're seeing one conflict after another. It never ends. I've been arguing that what I see over the horizon is the next conflict in South China Sea. This is where things are headed. Of course, now we're seeing this the escalation of tensions in the Middle East. That's going to have to sort of put the brakes on the Trump administration. But at the same time, is the Trump administration that gave the green light to the Israelis to do what it did and which pushed the Houthis to react to this? But the objective is the Far East. And this is why, like what Garland mentioned, you got the likes of South Korea are thinking right now. Philippines has been already pushed over the cliff for what just happened inside the country. Then you have Japan and Australia, but there is now a conversation regarding even the disintegration or the dismantling of AUKUS. And that now raised a concern among like the British, the Aussies, and of course some entities within the US.
Brian, is the conflict in Ukraine going to end on the battlefield, not diplomacy?
I think almost certainly it would have to, unless Russia is more overextended than any of us realize. It almost certainly is going to have to be settled on the battlefield. The U.S. has come to Russia in bad faith. They keep saying this is not Minsk 3, but every single aspect of it is it's Minsk 3 plus a Syria-style buffer zone.
Well, you know, Brian, what it's really interesting is that I usually don't bring it up because I want to stay in the realm of making an argument. But I live in Russia. Russia's economy is just fine, okay? It's humming along. The Russian ruble has increased in value 20%. Over the last 6 weeks, okay? There's money is all around, affluence is here. I keep seeing these articles that I live in a country that's about to collapse. Garland, is this self-serving for people knowing that they've lost this conflict?
Rhetorically speaking, it is self-serving. But in the kinetic real world, I think what Russia's doing is they're dragging this thing out because the United States is getting weakened politically and internally. It's getting weaker. It's getting weaker by having to fight in the Middle East, and it's getting weaker because it's battling with its allies. So I think Russia's smart enough to drag this thing out, knowing they have to win on the battlefield. And the longer this goes, the weaker the U.S. gets in all realms.
Yeah, well, you know, David, it's one of these things that, you know, it's trench warfare. It's like World War I. No, the Russian strategy is to destroy the Ukrainian military, not acquire land. And that's exactly what it's doing. David.
Well, for sure. I mean, we saw what happened in Kursk recently. And that's just the message to the Donald Trump, for that matter, and the West writ large. Russia's going to move forward, whether the West likes it or not. They are not going to back down, and it's going to end the conflict or the war. It's going to end on the Russians' term. This is a reality that the audience in the West needs to accept. It's a reality that I don't see any other change from that. So.
Yeah, well, Brian, how does the EU and NATO recover from this? Can they?
It's difficult to tell. What people have to remember is that the EU and NATO are ultimately extensions of U.S. foreign policy. So if it appears the EU and NATO have been damaged by this, and I think that they have, it means the tools of U.S. hegemony have been significantly damaged. And we see how willing the United States is to have, say, Europe absorb the costs of this proxy war. And we see the United States, and again, Secretary Hegseth telling Europeans, get your troops ready to go into Europe.
All right. On that note, gentlemen, discussion to be continued. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Dallas, and of course in Bangkok. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.